You are listening to the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast, episode 163, Excelling at Selling Albums.
Episode 163 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November the 9th, 2014. I'm Matthew D. Furlough, and this is my out of this galaxy brother, James Furlough.
Yeah, hey, here, give me 2 seconds here, and I will, I'll switch this up for you. There. I think that'll solve your feedback issues.
Thank
is that
you.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Did you see the movie?
I saw it on Tuesday.
You saw it on Tuesday because you're that awesome.
Yes.
I saw it Saturday evening. Interstellar. And I would say that the movie was stellar.
Yes. We gotta make an on-the-air decision.
No.
Probably should have made this off-the-air.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
Oh, man.
It's okay. It's too soon. Here, let's just say this. It's a fantastic movie. I highly recommend you see it sooner rather than later.
I don't have any problem with anybody going and seeing it. I would not recommend against it.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I'm okay. Hey, like we've talked about times out, you know, like we've talked about in the past, I'm a Matthew McConaughey fan. So
right.
I already like the movie. Like I said before, I'm an Amy Adams fan, and do you see that trailer of the one where she's an artist and the big eyes, and and she's
called Big Eyes?
Is that what it's called? I couldn't remember. But, you know, interesting plot in the sense that, you know, she marries a guy who takes credit for her artwork because, you know, it sounds like that's the culture, and so she has to struggle with that. And, I mean, it looks weird, but, like I said, Amy Adams was in it. I'm like, I might go see that because I like the movie she's in. So, so all that to say, I love Matthew McConaughey movies. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and you can feel free to disagree with me. Better than Guardians of the Galaxy. They're definitely different movies. Don't get me wrong. But, I'm going to go out there and just say, like, it's got Titanic epic levelness to the movie. You know?
Yeah.
Where that was just kind of a movie that just took the world by storm. And here's how I know it. Like I said, I saw it Saturday night. Went to church this morning. Very first guy I saw, he goes, "Hey, did you see Interstellar yet?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he thought it was amazing. In the high school message time, the guy talked about Interstellar. It's got that same, like, level of hype that Titanic had when it came out. Even though Titanic, it was kind of weird. Like, that took, it was like the next weekend, you know, it kind of happened. And then everyone realized, oh, this movie's fantastic. We need to go watch it. And
so
I think Christopher Nolan's got a winner on his hands. It's good.
The only problem that I think he's going to run into is that for him, he directed the only movie that has outgrossed Titanic. So anything short of that's a flop, you know, by a lot of people's standards.
Which one was that, by the way?
I think it was the Dark Knight Rises.
Wow.
I'm at Box Office Mojo right now. So let's see here. All time. Domestic. Now Avatar. I'm wrong. Avatar is number one. Titanic is number two. Marvel's The Avengers is number three. The Dark Knight is number four. And then The Phantom Menace, and then Star Wars, and then The Dark Knight Rises, then Shrek 2, and E.T. the Extraterrestrial, then Hunger Games, Catching Fire. Wow.
And these are all...
Catching Fire beat Pirates of the Caribbean Fire.
And these are all inflation-adjusted numbers?
Oh, of course not. No, that's not any fun.
Okay, that's why Avatar is number one.
Yeah, adjusted for inflation, of course, it's Gone with the Wind at a $1.6 billion.
That actually makes me feel good inside, knowing that that's number one.
And it's almost impossible to beat it. I mean, it's just such a number one, it's out of control. Because Star Wars, the original Star Wars, adjusted for inflation, was $1.4 billion. Sound of Music was $1.1 billion. E.T., $1.1, just barely under. Titanic is... And those are actually... Sound of Music and Extra E.T. were $1.15. Titanic's only at $1.1 billion, adjusted for inflation. Huh. And it's The Commandments, Jaws, Dr. Zhivago... The Exorcist, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 101 Dalmatians, The Empire Strikes Back, Ben-Hur, Avatar, finally coming in at number 14, Return of the Jedi, Jurassic Park, I think should be higher, Star Wars Episode 1, The Lion King, Sting, Raiders of the Lost Ark, The Graduate, Ghostbusters is number 32.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Pirates of the Caribbean, The Dead Man's Chest is 46. American Graffiti is number 44. I love looking at this stuff. Men in Black, number 79. Top Gun, number 107.
Cool.
The Matrix Reloaded is 113.
Reloaded was ahead of the original Matrix?
No.
Okay. You just didn't... You skipped over it. All right, cool.
Yeah, I'm just sort of... And then let me get down to this one. The Guardians of the Galaxy, 154. But honestly, at this point, it's on track to outdo Interstellar. Like, unless there's just a really long tail on Interstellar, which there very well might be.
I think Interstellar, like Titanic, remember Titanic, it wasn't the opening weekend that was the biggest. It was like the next three weekends were all bigger.
Yeah, but that was pre Rotten Tomatoes and Twitter, you know?
I guess. We'll see.
I know you're being hopeful.
I like it. Well, that and I didn't like Guardians of the Galaxy. Well, I mean, it was okay. But I don't think it deserved all the hype and everything that it got. But
yeah. I totally understand. Did you see... I got a chance to see Big Hero 6, which actually was the number one movie of the weekend.
Huh.
Because I saw Interstellar on Tuesday. And
was it good? Did Disney have another winner on their hands?
It's not Frozen. It's not Pixar. It's enjoyable. It's definitely, you're not going to regret spending the money on your ticket. It's not one of those movies.
I don't know how to interpret that, but okay.
It's good. I'd give it a solid 85. You know, give it a solid B+.
B+.
It's not a knock it out of the park. Like, you know, it's interesting. That's what I want to call it is a kids movie. And it's more traditionally, like, designed for kids, whereas I actually, this is not necessarily fair, but you wouldn't go about calling, what's it called, WALL-E a kid's movie. I mean, kids can enjoy it, but it's not a kid's movie, whereas Big Hero 6 is a kid's movie that adults can enjoy.
I understand.
It's just a different thing, man.
Yeah.
It's good. It's got some really funny parts, but yeah. So, what was cool. The movies this weekend?
Yeah, man. It was finally like there was that lull.
Yeah, they're coming back around, dude. Yeah, because now it's one after another. We got Dumb and Dumber 2 coming out this week, which I'm not gonna see that. I would totally see it if it manages to pull above a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, which means I'm not going to see it. That's my prediction. Because they've not even started ranking it yet, and kind of like how Rotten Tomatoes, how like studios go is, if they think they got a winner on their hands, they let people, like if it's a big name movie and they think they got a winner on their hands, they let people reviewing it start reviewing it early. If it's kind of a no-name movie, they review it early because, you know, they want to get as much attention as they can, even if it's not great attention. But the only movies that they don't let the reviews happen until, like, the day before the movie comes out are movies that they know are going to bomb. They're not going to do well critically, and they don't want the bad attention to happen. And they're already spending enough money on advertising, which it's just... But after that, that's when it starts to get really exciting. Because in like a week we've got in a couple of weeks we got what's it called? Hunger Games Part 3, Part 1.
Oh, I know. Which I don't know. The third book was the worst of them all, so I don't know how excited I am. Plus, you know, Plutarch's done for, and so you're like, They got to change the movie as a result of it. He's kind of a central character.
They claim they filmed everything. They got all the filming done before his.
Well, I heard there was one or two scenes, but I'm still like, what about part two? Did they just do it all at once?
Okay. Yeah, they did what they did with the original.
Anyways, movie. Like I said, I was not impressed with the books. So.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But then we got the battle of like seven or five or eight.
December 17th, five.
There we go. Battle of Five Armies, Mr. Hobbit. And the one I'm most excited about, coming to you directly from the director of Gladiator, one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
Exodus, Gods and Kings, one of my favorite, stories of all time.
Jesse was saying that too, and I was like, it's an amazing epic, like, it's an amazing story. There's a reason why they reference it over and over and over again. The question, cool. I guess the question is, are they at least going to pander to the Christian community so I can enjoy it? Or are they taking some creative liberties like they did with Noah?
It's funny. What they did with Noah is interesting because that was actually more from everything that I read. It felt like they took a lot of creative liberties until you realize that they were pulling a tremendous amount from Jewish cultural stories and stuff. Like it wasn't designed for Christians, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a little column A and a little column B. I mean, like, come on, Gladiator, like, that, where are the historical accuracies? I got a feeling that it's gonna hit enough of the main points to feel like, okay, they're telling the story. They're gonna hit enough main points so that there's not gonna be a huge backlash, but they're turning it into an epic battle thing, It's going to be awesome.
Right. But in reality, there wasn't much fighting. But yeah, I understand. Fair enough. Yeah, no, we got movies continue to be good.
Exactly. So, anyways, what we're not here to talk about, James? We're not here to talk about movies. We are here instead, on the other hand, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean soap opera corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Awesome. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we're on the social media, man. We do that circuit. We do that thing. We tweet. We post things. On Instagram, I'm NextWiggin4. On PlayStation Network, I'm NextWiggin4. NextWiggin4. And then on the Twitter, I'm at Matthew D. Furlow.
Let's see here. On Xbox Live, I am FurlowPro27. On Flickr, I am also FurlowPro27.
FurlyPro.
let me think here. I'm trying to think of other. I think I'm just straight up James Furlow on MySpace, if I remember correctly.
Wow.
But yeah, you can. It's been a while.
Yeah, obscure dead.
So that's where I'm at.
Now you're going to tell us what your username on LinkedIn is.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, man.
Can I be all, like, set a precedent and then, or, prescient? I don't know what the right word for this. Prognosticate? Oh, I don't know how. Well, I guess that's essentially what you just did with LinkedIn. Never mind. I'm good. Keep going.
All right. I'm glad we came to that conclusion. If you want to get more about the show specifically, you've had enough of us as individuals, and you're like, I'm done. But I kind of want more of this whole tech stuff these guys are talking about. You can always go to furloughbros.com. That's kind of the hub of this whole dealio. There we got the link to the YouTube. We got the link to the podcast. So whichever direction you're coming from, you can find. That's your bridge, basically. We're also pretty cool in that we are cool. Yeah, but then again, we also post all our links. So any of the videos, any of the audio clips, any of the text files and such that we reference today, and you want to learn more, you want to refute what we say, you want to agree emphatically and share it with all your friends,
yeah,
whatever your heart desires, go check it out, furloughbros.com. It's all there. Conveniently and beautifully arranged.
True. So, did you take advantage of happy hour this week?
Oh, yeah, I did. So, yeah, Google Inbox, they, it was like Wednesday between 3 and 4. If you emailed them, they'd send you a link to that one thing that you can do. It was really a weird way to go about it. Inbox is the new platform.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a weird way to go about it. Like, email us and we'll send you a link. Like, I didn't get it, but...
It's an email service. What'd you expect them to do?
I don't know. Like... It's just such a weird way to do it. It's like nobody does that. I get like
it's an email. Come on, it's an email service. It's all about sending email. That makes perfect sense to me.
So you think they did it just because they didn't? And it's like they actually went out of their way to make it more email centric as opposed to go to this link and you know
submitting. Totally. Yep.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
So, for those of you who are playing catch up here, Google has a new inbox service where they've been experimenting with different ways of displaying your inbox information, and so they've hit on one that they think is kind of a winner. Or yeah, they're just experimenting with it, and it was invite only, and so they had this happy hour where it was like, you don't have to worry about an invite. If you just ask, we'll give it to you. But you have like an hour window to do it. So if you missed it, too bad. But let us know in the comments. We'll send you an invite. We've got a bunch of them now. And yeah. So what they've done is you can then download an iOS or Android app or visit it online. It's inbox.google.com. But the idea is that it tries to set it up so that... I'm actually struggling with how to articulate this. It does a couple things. Number one, if there's like an attachment or something inside the email, it will show it to you. If there's some like information about like a flight or a calendar event, it will show that to you in your inbox, like in line with the email. It also groups different types of emails together, like promotions or social media or things like that, into a group, and then you click on it, and it kind of expands that group, so then you can see the emails inside of it. And the idea being that it just surfaces the most important content or emails to you. It's also kind of has a to-do list feature built into it, which I honestly have not fully explored yet. And then the other piece of it that I think goes with it, and we'll talk about this with the other apps that they released this week, it takes advantage of their material design and their new material concept. You know, and the material design is new colors, new fonts, new, you know, ways of layering and animations are kind of the key pieces behind that. They kind of do some reordering and some mixing. It's not just in whatever it is, reverse chronological order with newest on top. Not always necessarily. The other thing I've noticed is that if I kept notifications on just because, I don't know, I'm weird and I decided I'd give that a whirl. What I've noticed is actually kind of cool, is for like social or promotional emails, it doesn't, the little badge on your app doesn't increment up and it doesn't give you a push notification. But if you get an email from someone who they determined to be important, it'll actually send you a push notification. Hey, got an email. So like, for example, whenever Jesse emails me, it gives me a push notification. When Facebook does, it does not.
Right. Well, and I think it's interesting that, that's actually how the main Google, Gmail works. Is it?
Oh, does it?
Gmail. Yeah.
Cause I turned off all of that,
notifications.
You know, I had stuff. The tabs and stuff where I had like your main inbox and then those other ones.
Your social and promo.
Yeah, I got rid of all that because I was like, whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I've been using that.
Of course,
for
you got to understand, my inbox is typically not very full. right now, the combination of all my inboxes is at 14 emails.
14 new emails or 14 emails, period?
Yeah, let me see this. That's new, because I haven't checked it at all over the weekend, so I'm at 44, I guess, total. So that puts me at 30. That's across all my email inboxes.
Yeah, yeah. See, I'm not like that, which kind of stresses me out with inbox.
I can imagine that.
Yeah, I'm like, it's fine the way it is on Gmail. I gotta just try to really like decide, okay, I'm going to use this for a little while and get used to it. I feel like one of my biggest problems is I feel like I'm trusting the server an awful lot. I guess I do that with Google.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? That's an interesting comment.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like it's not in reverse chronological order and stuff like that. Like, that just, you know, they're really taking, you know, they're going really far out of the way to say, we're pretty sure we know what you want and when you want it. And it just makes me nervous.
Hmm. That's something I'll fall through the cracks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, really, because what happens to, honestly, what it's not that they'll put something in the wrong place necessarily. Because what they do is they're going to, because that's how the whole ordering system, like with Gmail currently, you turn off the tabs, but they try to put everything where they think it needs to go. And in by and large, I'd say they're actually pretty good about putting it in the right place. Where I run into problems is that they tend to put things in your primary, like just make sure they get everything. So it sort of becomes overwhelming at some point, and it's just like, you know, and one of the things that happens is you know, when you've, for me, to sort of deal with that overwhelming amount of information, I've got the maximum number of emails visible at any given time, so, and it's all, like, you know, the smallest form factor, so I can see who it's from, what the main, like, line is, and when it came in, for tons of emails, like right away, and that's how I deal with it. Whereas with inbox, it's much more about like,
oh, yeah,
you know, it breaks out the photos and stuff. I'm gonna be totally honest. I want to know that there's an attachment, but I don't want to necessarily see the attachment right away.
Well, part of their idea is you don't have to open the email.
I know. I get that, and I think my first reaction is I don't like that. You know, I don't, it's there's too much information. There's too much useless information on the screen for what I'm currently doing, which is trying to parse what's important and what's not. And they're saying, well, don't worry about it. We'll tell you what's important or not. Like, no, you don't understand. I want to decide what's important or not. And yeah, so I don't know. It's tough. It's tough.
There's like one feature that they need to add on the iOS app.
Yeah.
And that's the ability to delete a message without having to open it. That kills me. I mean, because I get some emails where it's like, I don't know, maybe it just means I should unsubscribe from them. But I'll get an email and be like, okay, I got it. And then I just delete it without opening it. Cause I don't, getting the notification was enough, or getting the email was enough of a notification. If that makes sense.
Yeah. Like all of my social stuff is, all my social network stuff is that way, where really and truly, if it's, you know, if there's a notification I want to see, the information will be in the headline, right? That's kind of what's
right.
That's,
yeah.
And I can just delete the rest. And then with the promotions, it's funny. There's a lot of times where it's like, I'm not in the mood to look up. There's some that I open every time a promo email comes in. You know, Amazon's My Habit, where it's like, you know, they've got like cool clothes and shoes and stuff. And I check those out pretty much every day when they come in. And then there's Spark Fun. I check those pretty much every time. Netflix, I usually just the headline is good enough.
You get Netflix emails? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
I guess you would and I wouldn't.
But a great example of one that's like hit and miss is Parts Express, which is they do audio stuff. And sometimes, like if I've been thinking about, you know, I'd kind of like a better bass. Like I'd say about half the time I open them or not. And, you know, the times I don't open them, yeah, I just want to be able to delete it. Have it go away. You know, get it out of the way. Yeah, so I don't know. It's, you know, but they just launched it. They're going to do a bunch of, you know, a bunch of
tweaking,
figuring it out. And
I don't get the, I guess it's the reminders piece, but I haven't used that. Don't touch it. But I've got my own, you know, Remember the Milk system, so I don't care. But yeah, I'm trying to decide. You know, let me rephrase that. So, I used the mailbox app for a while, you know, which had a lot of the swipe gestures that everyone else has kind of adopted now, and the idea of snoozing. And I just found I didn't snooze emails. I've also noted, I mean, maybe I'm the weird one where I just don't have a lot of emails, and so I'm not the normal person. Maybe.
Yeah.
And so I just find that, like, you know, Apple's stuff is, it works, you know, where I can swipe quickly, open, delete, whatever. I've just found that to be what makes it, you know, easiest for me. It's got all my different emails, you know, because, like, HP has an Exchange thing. And so, you know, it's all kind of built into it. I mean, for a while, I'm back to just using the default calendar app on my phone as well. I don't have a special app for that. And I think that's the kind of thing where I'm sure, you know, Apple's paying attention to what's the best of the best and what's doing well, and then they'll incorporate those features. And they finally reached good enough quality for me where I went, all right, cool, I'll just use the default. I don't need to go third-party route. You know, we'll see if that... You know, I'm kind of like you, where I'm like, yeah, I'll probably end up using it and probably use it for the next couple of weeks, and then I wouldn't be surprised if I just stop.
Yeah.
But well, I don't know. At least for now, or I'll use the default Apple one for the phone, no big deal. And then when I'm on a browser, I'll use the inbox style, and that'll be cool, and that'll kind of keep me using the new one, because then I don't care, because then I'm just using a Google interface, and so I'll use their inbox style. It's fine, and I don't have enough emails to it to be a problem. And I found that the web one is actually better. I like the web one because they included buttons and stuff that aren't in the mobile version, and so it makes it a little bit easier to go through emails.
The only problem you're going to run into is when it gets unceremoniously deleted in 2 years.
yeah, well, you know, there's that too.
But
which happened. So inbox wasn't the only thing. I mean, they did make that available, but they'd already announced it. Google also announced for Android only the new Google Calendar update. From what I can see, it has a very similar design to the Gmail in that sense that it's no longer just a blank calendar. It really is. Sure, it's got the days of the week, but when you have an event, it might have a picture of that place or a map of it. It's all, you know, when you're looking at the schedule, it's all kind of in line with it. It's also got the bright colors and, you know, that similar, that button on the bottom that you can, you know, do different activities from. It's, like I said, it's only available on Android. The tablet app actually looks pretty sweet. I'm kind of hoping that this one makes it over to the web eventually too.
Yeah.
Because it looks pretty darn nice. I like it. The other thing that they updated, again, it was maps to the material design. And so I opened it up on, it's also, that one is available for iPhone. It looks cool. I mean, you know, it's maps.
I like it. They made a couple of small changes to the UI that I think are big improvement. Or, you know,
big question, though, does it still drain your battery when you use it?
I never use maps unless I'm sitting in my car, and that's the only time I ever charge my phone, so no. I can't tell.
Wait, so do you use the Gmail app for your GPS stuff, or do you use Apple Maps?
I use both, depending on what I need and what I want.
Okay.
So Apple Maps is great because it, you know, has the main screen thing. And so usually I use like Apple Maps quick for traffic on routes that I already know. I use Google if I don't really know where I'm going, because they do they tell you what turn lane to be in, which is great. So that's sort of the
interesting
factor. I use both.
Okay.
And then they did also,
I just read a review about, Lollipop in general, which again uses the Material design. And from what I understand, it's pretty awesome. You know, they've done what, you know, there's definitely a convergence happening between all the different, mobile operating systems, where they're all kind of landing on this idea of layers. And, you know, Google uses the paper metaphor, but it's not ice cube morphic. It's just kind of, again, this idea of layers. Their colors are a little bit bolder than, say, Apple's. They really have gone big on giving you feedback on any time you touch something, so that you know that it's been touched. But, and from what I understand, you know, by trying to be consistent, all the apps should start to look similar and use similar, you know, use patterns. So, sounds like a pretty cool little update.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I think we've said this before, but it's just worth mentioning one more time. I think that Android and iOS are very even on at least the design front, and I could probably be happy with either operating system. I'm just sticking with the one that I'm comfortable with, and I would have no problems recommending Android to somebody to use.
Yeah. Actually, I had this interesting experience today with Google. This is not apropos of nothing. It's kind of tangled in a weird way, but I'm having a conversation with a friend of mine, and I decided to put in the question into the search field: what phones which iPhones will the Apple Watch work with? Okay. And the top result wasn't actually a result; it was just a little box with what it thought the right answer was. Which it came up with the, you know, it's these phones, this is when it's going to come out, the starting price is going to be this, and these are the phones it's going to work with. Which I was like, wow, that was actually pretty impressive. Like, you guys nailed that. And I actually gave feedback, because I was like, wow, that was, I mean...
And where did you do this?
I just Googled it. I just typed it into the browser, and that was the information that came up. And but I did have this horrifying realization, as the one thin veiled excuse that I really was holding on to as my big motivation for why I had to get an iPhone 6 was that it wasn't that the Apple Watch wasn't going to work with the iPhone 5. Uh-huh. And guess what phone it works with? So I really have, like,
you got to work harder.
I will be dropping $1,200 on a phone that I could do today. I mean, like, it's not that I don't have the money. It's just that I have to somehow justify that in my own brain in order to purchase it. Like, that's hard, man. That's hard. And, like, the one real excuse, like, I feel like there's actual real benefit to having the Apple Watch, and I'm looking forward to having that, and I feel like I can justify that expense. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, man, that Google Watch experience, man, it tainted me.
Mm.
Android Wear.
I understand. What is that design on your shirt?
Have you ever watched the Venture Bros?
Oh, there's a skull. Okay. I can only see the top part of it. No, I don't know what that is.
It's a pretty funny TV show, but I was messing around with bleached shirts, where you take wax paper, you cut out a pattern, you iron it onto your shirt, and then you spray bleach on it to hold out the pattern. So I made the shirt.
Oh, cool.
I made it whack back when I was really fat, so I only wear it when I'm like in home because it's like a tip on me.
That's fair. But, that's fair. Yeah, cool. No, I just saw it and I went, huh, it's an interesting design. I like it.
Anywho, so this is dumb, but
why are we talking about it then? I'm kidding.
I was gonna say because it's like I've wanted to do this forever, and having somebody else go out and do it is almost as good as doing it yourself because it doesn't cost you anything, but you get to see it. So this hobbyist, he decided to make a drone.
Oh my gosh!
But a rather large drone. It's a quadcopter. It's kind of long and it's probably, it looks like it's like about 6 feet long, and probably 2 feet wide with four rather large turbines. Thing takes off and it sort of like goes back and forth and it moves around. But sitting on top of the drone is a remote control airplane, that he can launch from his flying drone. So it's basically like the flying aircraft carrier from the Avengers, and it totally works. And I really want one.
Question though, can he land the plane back on the carrier?
I do not believe he is capable.
I'm pretty certain that I would destroy multiple models trying.
Oh yeah. I might intentionally put firecrackers, like explosives, on the plane just to see what would happen. I mean, it could get exciting really quick. But yeah,
does that video have sound?
Just the sound of the turbines going. I mean, it'd be rather
okay
unexciting for our listeners.
Okay.
Yeah. But
I won't click it then. Dude, that's kind of awesome.
It's very cool.
Are you still, I know you've talked about, like, making a blimp one day. Are you still kind of on that, or?
Yeah. I'm, every once in a while I get some enthusiasm for it, and I take a few more steps in figuring out exactly what that would look like and how I would do it. And I'm to the point where, you know, it's mostly just money now. I just got to save up for it and pull the trigger. Or buy an iPhone. You know, whatever. It's kind of...
the choices we make in life.
Right?
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's cool. I wanted to share that because I thought it was awesome. And I like that sort of thing.
I appreciate you sharing it because it is awesome.
So. In other news.
No, dude, we're just flying through. Which is
this
nice.
This is good because we got a lot of articles. So there was a big to-do this week. Have you listened to Taylor Swift's new album, 1989?
So from what I understand, there's a wonderful mashup of that song with like a 1980s workout video that is like perfectly aligned to it.
You Shake It Out, you mean? Her number one single?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
So I've listened to that song.
Yeah. Taylor Swift,
she's a pop artist now, right?
As though she wasn't for the last six albums, like whatever. Like we're gonna dive into the weeds a little bit on this one, but like seriously, like Taylor Swift has been a pop artist from pretty much day one. Like, I realized that she played at the Country Music Awards and, you know, and wore cowboy boots, but like, let's be real here. Like, it's like a 2-degree change for her to become fully a quote unquote pop artist. Like, really? Whatever. Anyways, so she's
more marketing than actual. All right, yes. Fair enough.
And not to mention the fact that, like, country is the number one, like, music in the world right now. It's huge. It dwarfs everything else, including, quote, pop rock.
Really?
And, which, oh, yeah, it is the preeminent type form of music. And which kind of like in, I mean, like, I don't know how you're supposed to go about defining what pop is, but if you're defining it as the most popular sort of music, it's pretty much like that. What is, you know, the country is, you know, that's one way to define it. Okay, that's pop. And then there's like, okay, well, let's define it in like what, you know, pop rock normally sounds like. Like, really, like, that is what country sounds like today. Like, we're fully into the, it's just, it all sounds the same. It doesn't sound anything like country western of 3 decades ago, 2 decades ago, 1 decade ago. They have some of the tropes of the old, you know, country. Like, they sing about their trucks every once in a while, but, you know, like, so many of, like, the pop artists are, they wear more makeup than the girls, the dudes do. Like, how are these, how is this country? Anyways. So, Taylor Swift. I'm trying to bring it back on the rails.
Wow.
Yeah.
Struck a chord there.
It's, and it's fun. I mean, it's good. I don't listen to country primarily, but I got a couple of country play, you know, mixes. I have country songs on country, I'm air quoting, on iTunes. So it's like not even, not I'm a hater. It's just, it's so marketing. It's crazy.
Well, and that was, I mean, like Garth Brooks was huge, and he was, and he was also that blend of country pop.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, I understand.
So she took the final half step to be, she got rid of her banjo in any of her songs, and now she's considered pop. But she so she launched the song "Shake It Out," which I will admit is mind-numbingly catchy. I don't even understand what that does to my brain. I don't think science could study it enough. Like, I don't hate the song, and usually those sorts of super catchy songs, it's like the bass song, "All About That Bass, About That Bass." That song comes on the radio nowadays. I gotta change channel. Like, I can't.
What is that?
I'm all about the bass. I'm all about the bass, about the bass. No trouble. Are you trying to get me to sing it? So I'll do it in my head.
No, I'm just a loser. That's all. So I
that song.
Is it on the is it on the iTunes top 50 chart?
Yeah, it might not be today.
If it's not on that, I haven't heard it.
What?
I've probably heard it.
You've heard the song.
Who sings it?
Yeah, Meghan Trainor. She was on the CMAs. Did you watch the CMAs? Probably not.
CMA, no.
Country Music.
All About That Bass. Megan Trainor. I'm going to play it. Are you going to play it or I'm playing it?
It's number two on iTunes. Go for it.
Number two on iTunes. Megan Trainor. Then I've probably heard it. Oh, she looks... Yeah, I know what it is. Here, hold on. Let me...
Well, now we got to play it just so that...
Yeah, I'm getting there. Just don't worry. I just got to... You got echo now. Sorry. And I'll only do it for like a couple seconds because I don't want to get in trouble.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all
about that bass. I feel like we've done this, we've played this before.
No trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, about that bass.
My song's my head for the rest of the show.
All right, and then Taylor Swift's is what? Shake It Out? Shake It Off.
Shake It Out.
I don't know. All right, one more. Here we go. Oh yeah, it just screams of catchy.
I stay out too late. Got nothing in my brain.
This one for, she had some cameos in it, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what people say.
Or am I thinking of something different?
I go on too many dates. But I can't make them stay.
Maybe I'm thinking of Weird Al.
At least that's what people say.
Tacky. Mm-hmm.
That's what people say.
Cool.
Yeah, that's enough to have a second minute for the rest of the day.
I love that song.
Anyway, so she...
So the big news, we'll get to... Okay, so we've established the baseline of what the song is. Who Taylor Swift is. And she's like... So, and from what I understand, she's selling a whole lot of albums. Like...
Well,
I don't know if she's surpassed Britney Spears yet, but she's
Are you kidding me? Britney Spears is nothing. She's a...
She sent me a chat.
She's a pop.
Echo. Got it.
Yeah, so... So basically what happened was T-Swift had put her music on Spotify. She's got it on all the different major servers, right?
Yeah.
But one of them was Spotify, and she had her entire catalog, including Shake It Out, which was the first single from the album 1989. And this kind of all goes along. You know, I've talked about this a couple of times, and so I think it's important. This whole idea of music is great for selling everything but music. And Spotify is notorious for not making much money for the artists, well, for pretty much anybody, including Spotify. But the problem is that, like, you know, or the deal is you get the information out there, so it allows you to sell T-shirts and sell concert tickets, right, and every whatever else. Well, Taylor she talked on the Wall Street Journal a couple of months back about, like, you know, not really being a big fan of the whole streaming music and really believing that artists should get paid for what they do, like, and they shouldn't be doing it for free. And so when 1898, that's a different era. When 1989 dropped the whole album, they didn't immediately upload it to Spotify. They were just on iTunes. It sold like crazy. It's her third consecutive album to go platinum or gold or meteoric. I don't know what the different things are, but just make a ton of money. And most people, like, it, the kind of the consensus has in the music industry is that the era of going platinum is over. There's just, nobody's going to do it anymore. And that's selling over a million albums, right? And so
it's a lot of albums.
It's a lot of albums. It's a tremendous amount of money. Nobody will do that anymore, just because the whole thing of you buy the songs you want, and with Spotify and Pandora, there's so many, and you know, pirating, there's so many options that it's just not practical to expect to sell that many albums. So it's even more driving towards the whole thing of, you know, we're not selling songs, we're selling everything that songs sell. And it's funny, when you walk into Target, you walk past the music section, they got like a whole friggin' aisle dedicated to T-Swift and T-shirts and cards, like the whole nine yards without an album in sight. Like,
huh. What is
that? Or I guess there's like five albums, but it's, you know, it's, they're selling Taylor. And, and so she basically, like, So earlier this week, she kind of made a big to-do in that she pulled her entire catalog, all of her old songs, off of Spotify. And I'll be honest, number one, kind of got a celebrity crush on her. She's super cute. Number two,
Be honest with your feelings there?
You know, I'm going out on a limb. I'm taking a bold stance. I realize that that's it's controversial, I was actually to the point, like, I've never listened to it. And, like, obviously, I've heard every song that has hit the top of the charts, which is a lot of them. But I've never listened to an entire album of hers.
Uh-huh.
And I'll be honest, I was kind of like, you know, maybe I should give it a go. I've got the whole Spotify premium thing.
Ah.
I'll check it out. I'm not going to buy the album. I am a man. I'm nearly 30. I can't be buying Taylor Swift albums and having that on my iTunes, like, purchase history. That's just not cool. But I got
Katy Perry, so, you know, whatever.
Well, yeah, I know. Yeah.
I have a couple Taylor Swift songs. I got a couple, I'll admit.
There's nothing wrong with buying a couple of Taylor Swift songs. But, like...
Let me see. Let's see here. Taylor... How do you spell her name? I feel like...
Pretty straightforward. Taylor Swift.
Is it T-A-Y?
Yeah.
How
do you know it's spelled Taylor?
I don't know. I have one song. That's it. Our song.
I have none. I have none of Katy Perry, I'm not enough T Swift. Let's see.
You're missing out.
This one's going to be embarrassing. I have quite a few Lady Gagas. but whatever. She's different. She's a different case.
Of course. Yes, totally.
She's too weird for it to be like, for it to be not like, for it not, she's too weird for it to be weird. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I gotcha.
So anyway, so she pulled it all from Spotify, and there was a big to-do, and Spotify took advantage of it. They immediately published a playlist called "While Taylor's Away," you know, sort of implying, oh, we'll get her back, don't worry. And you know, it's a bunch of just other, you know, pop starlets that do the same sort of thing that Taylor does, not to as much success, of course, because nobody does. She is the number two grossing artist this year, behind only, give you three guesses, who beat Taylor Swift this year?
Okay, let me think here. Who would beat her? I don't know. I have no idea who came out with albums this year. It's been a long year. Let me see. Is it a male or female? We play 20 questions.
Female artist. She's number two grossing female artist. Who's number one?
I feel like if I... Here, let me see. Just wait.
What are you doing?
I'm going to the iTunes store.
You can't do that. No, I can't remember
any names.
Well, then...
No. Bette Midler.
No, probably not.
I don't know. That was what was on top for new releases. Ooh, Queen. The Platinum Collection.
Definitely a dude.
I guess that would be true. I feel like there's like only two girls that would do it. I'm like, was it Beyonce's one, and then who's the other one? That other girl. I don't know.
Kate Perry would be my other guess. It is Mrs. Z though.
Who?
Mrs. Z.
Mrs. Z.
Yeah, Jay-Z's significant other, aka Beyonce.
Yes! Wait, is that the name I said originally?
Yes, you did. You threw Beyonce out there.
Good.
Yeah. I just like to be too cool for the room. So you're talking somebody who's making a tremendous amount of money, and she's about to make a tremendous amount more, Taylor Swift specifically, by pulling all of her stuff off of Spotify. Does alienate a certain group of people who, feel like they can't be buying that album. I don't know. I feel she only pulled it from Spotify. She didn't pull it from Pandora. She didn't pull it from Beats Music. I'm sure it's because she is so contracted with Apple that you can't even, it would be easier to literally be born again as a clone than it would be to extricate herself from Apple at this point, I'm quite sure.
Well, I mean, that would be her problem with that is she'd pull it from Beats and Apple and go, yeah, no problem. We'll take you off of everything.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll there goes all of it.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't need to feature you on the homepage of iTunes. That's cool. No problem.
Yeah, so we're fine. So basically what her justification was, and I was glad about her justification. I think there would be a real temptation to kind of sit there and say like, you know, hey, it's try to take a moral high ground, try to make it seem as though, try to make it seem as though
it's not about the money.
It's not about the money, but she didn't. It's the money, and. She did.
That's why we all like her. She's honest.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, which I think, like, if she hadn't said that, it would have been a PR disaster. And she didn't. And she was, she was careful about it. I did like the one, her explanation of what the deal with Spotify is that in the landscape of the music industry itself is changing so quickly that everything new, like Spotify, all feels to me like a grand experiment, and I'm not willing to contribute my life's works to experiments that I don't feel fairly compensates the writers, producers, artists, and creators of this music. I just don't agree with perpetuating the perception that music has no value and should be free. She's basically saying, you know, everybody's got to make some coin off of this. And it's from what I've read, the people that are actually taking the biggest pounding right now is that it used to be that, like, artists made no money off of the album, period. They made all their money off of selling T-shirts at the venue. The venue promoters made the money off of the ticket sales. The venues made a lot of money off of ticket sales. The artists got rich off of T-shirt sales. The labels got crazy rich off of album sales. And the writers made a living off of song sales. And nowadays, there's just less money to go around in general. So the artists who can really pull the crowd in still make a tremendous amount of money off of T-shirt sales. And obviously there's a lot that goes into it, but they're not necessarily making huge money off of their performances, or they're not making huge money off of album sales. They're doing it, they're merchandising. They're doing what George Lucas did. Then there's, the promoters are still making good money off of that because thanks to services like Ticketmaster, they're able to pull in huge amounts of money without alienating the fans. But the labels don't make as much money as they used to. They're making a living at this point. Like so many of them firing tons of people, over the years, they've found a new balance, but it's a completely different, it's not like it was in the late 90s where there's just unbelievable money running around in the music industry. Especially for the people on top, but the people that have really gotten completely squeezed out are the writers, the people that are actually, they're making the hit songs. They can't make anything off of it because they don't get any money off of the performances, the venues, the albums. The labels still want to take as big a piece as they can, and they've got the authority and power to do that. So the songwriters, they get these tiny little cuts. And it's like they're talking about how much Shake It Out made, which is, you're like number one song this year. And, I can't find the number right now. But it's like you're talking less than $10,000 for that song, playtime on Spotify. It's tiny. That's nothing. It's unbelievably small amounts of money. And Spotify is arguing that they pay 70% of all of their revenue goes to artists. And... yet
goes to the music community.
Correct. Okay. You're right. Thank you for that. And then, and the thing is it's like, there's so many different ways to, there's so many arguments about how much money should the music industry be making and everything. And, and it all started with the advent of, pirating and people trying to justify it one way or another. And I think some of the arguments have real legs, and some of the arguments are a little bit equivocating, trying to morally justify what what otherwise shouldn't be happening. And to me, I think we haven't talked about it in a long time on this show, but I still think the whole nature of digital media is kind of an open question. I don't think it's a closed case. I don't think it should be yet. Obviously, Taylor owns her songs, though, so she can do whatever the heck she wants. And she gets to pen her name as the writer to enough of her songs that I think she actually has more of an appreciation for the writer's plight than maybe others out there. So it's like, okay. And it would be, and the writer credit would be such a small portion of her bottom line. I can't imagine it would hit her that hard, But at least she, they've always, the character that she plays, the media has always portrayed as somebody who really cares about being a songwriter. And so it seems that, it's so hard when you really just get down to the brass tacks on all of this stuff, because it's like it's so much. There's so much marketing involved in it that you never really know the people behind it all. And you know, the one thing that is definitely for sure is that she is a very, very competent businesswoman. And
yeah, that's what I've heard.
You know, and she's got a really, really good team behind her of people who support her and inform her. And, you know, as the CEO of her company, which is effectively what she is, you know, she's got a good team behind her and they're telling her what's going on. I just think it's very interesting that, like, you've got the Lady Gagas of the world who, you know, as we talked about, they don't care. Their goal is, you know, they want to make as much money off of the music as they can, but that's not where the gold is for them. That's, you know, that's not what they're going to focus on. And then you've got Taylor Swift, you know, taking a pretty bold step in that. It's just it's an interesting world that, you know, is growing here. And it makes you wonder about Apple's desire to, you know, set up a Spotify-style, you know, create a playlist and play the playlist as opposed to an algorithmically generated radio station, which is what iTunes Radio is, or, you know, as akin to Pandora. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, and you can, when you look at this, somebody who's as big and as powerful in the industry as Taylor Swift stepping out from it, man, if they couldn't sign Taylor to that service, that would be a huge blow. I mean, even if it's not available on any service, so it's not like Spotify has a leg up, just the fact that this hurts Spotify, because to me it's like, I've had Spotify Premium for a couple of months. And I like it, but I'm kind of at the point of the only time I really take advantage of this premium service is playlists at the gym. It's kind of nice to be able to just pick a random workout playlist and hear a couple of new songs. But most of my Spotify time hasn't changed at all. Like, I've listened to it at work and, you know, and that's sort of where I do the music discovery. So I don't know.
No, I think there's definitely an opportunity out there for, you know, like a company like Apple with fairly deep pockets to say, hey, we want you. How much is it going to cost us? And, yeah, you know, and then they're going to say, hey, we're Spotify, but better. We have a more complete catalog. If you love the song so much, you could, you know, you could buy it if you wanted to. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think it opens a door of possibility for, say, like Apple.
That is definitely true because, you know, that's definitely true. There is an opportunity there. If you could pull in Garth Brooks, Taylor Swift, and the Beatles, you know.
Well, they got one of the three.
Right. You know, that would be, and Beyonce, of course, because she's, you know, Mrs. Z. You know, I think if you could do that, if Apple could do that, that would be huge for them and their ability to build out that. I just don't know if they can.
And then if they can lower the price to $5 and just, I mean, and that's where Spotify starts to really struggle.
But Apple wants to make money. It would have to, at that point, it would be a lost leader. They would be paying, you know, Spotify, like, you know, how do you make it so Spotify claims, you know, and they're pretty transparent about this, they're paying a huge portion of their revenue back to the music community. How does Apple manage to pay enough to allow someone like Taylor Swift to justify putting her entire catalog onto that service, while, you know, I don't know. Well, how do they make those finances work? You know.
I don't know.
Which is why I think you haven't seen an answer to that question yet from Apple. They're saying the same thing. And probably what the real answer is, Apple should do what Apple does. They should come out with a premium service and say, yeah, it costs $20 a month, but you never have to buy an album again. and we're just going to compensate the artists what they need. It's a super premium, you know. If they could offer like a, you know, $25 a month.
What do you pay for iTunes Match?
It's like $25 a year.
A year? Okay.
Yeah. And that comes with ad-free iTunes radio. And
well, see, that's what I'm trying to think of. Like, they could start to do some bundling like that, you know, where it's like you get ad-free iTunes radio. We'll match all whatever's currently on your iTunes playlist, so it's all there. You know, very similar to what Spotify does, right? Where they'll scan your library and say, here they all are. And then it's like, so we've got you taken care of there. And then, you know, you can stream whatever you want. And heck, if you just want to straight up buy the song because you love it so much, you can do that too. Maybe even give it to you at a discount because you're a, you know, you're a subscriber. I don't, and maybe it's $15 a month. You know, I don't know. Maybe 20 sounds a little high, but maybe they could do it all for, maybe they could do all that for $10 a month. What do they care? It's the same type of music, you know, as far as they're concerned. But I don't know. I could see something like that.
I just wonder if it's one of those things where Apple.
Oh yeah. Plus we'll give you some iCloud storage space for the fun of it. You know, they could start to throw that in there, and you get to the point where, like, yeah, okay, it's like the Amazon Prime deal. Like, oh my gosh, there's enough bundled together where it just makes sense to get it.
And I wonder if Apple wouldn't be better served to just say, we're gonna offer a service. We're basically gonna say a subscription service to iTunes. Everything in iTunes. You can download everything. You can play whatever you want. You get all of iTunes for $25 a month. And just, you know, I think if they were to do something like that, what they would do is they would alienate a huge group of people, would say that, well, that's way too expensive. But you'd get a couple of music fanatics really into it. If you could charge enough to, quote unquote, fairly compensate the artists, then you would get, you know, you would get them on board with it. And what they could do is they could say, okay, this is the new platinum standard. As I think that's what the artists need, is they need somebody to say, you know, to say Netflix set the bar too low. We need to charge more than that for new music. And because, you know, that really is what, that's, I feel like, has set the standard for what should things cost online for everything, is Netflix and their $10 a month. Which made sense in the context of DVDs, definitely, and they've continued to force it to make sense with, by, you know, by ad hocking their library together, and, you know, same with all the other competing services. But nobody's willing to say, well, this is how much what you want is access to everything anytime you want, including the ability to download it. That's what you want. This is how much it would cost in order to make everybody happy. And then just letting the consumers that are willing to afford it, afford it.
Well, I think you're going to find, like we did with the laptop example that we gave last week or 2 weeks ago, where, yeah, people say they want specific things, but then, you know, and you can optimize for a certain part, you know, like with the laptops, it was thin, light, whatever. Long battery life. And then when they start to get into it, they go, no, we just want all the features. And there's certain things we're willing to deal with to get that, you know, which might be we're paying more for the computer, whatever. And I feel like that might be the same thing here. We're like, yeah, I want access to every single song and the ability to download it if I want.
Yeah.
That's it. I want it all.
I think if Apple were to come out with we have rich customers, and we have customers who are able to pay for. We don't want everybody to be able to do this. That's not the point. We want people who want to be able to afford to do this to do this. And it's funny, honestly. Like, I look at how much I spend on iTunes every month for the last 2 years. And if $25 was the cost a month, that's not out of the question for me. Like, that's, you know. It's not totally unfair.
Man, you buy a ton of music.
I do. I spend a lot of money on music.
And I realize that, I mean, you may be a little extreme, but I get the feeling that people are closer to you than they are to me.
I guarantee that's the case.
Because I'm pretty sure I spend close to, like, $25 a year on music.
Yeah. You know.
But I spend money on movies. I'll do that.
Yes.
I'm going to get Interstellar when it comes out, and I'll watch it multiple times, and I'll love it.
I tend to spend less on movies than I do on music nowadays, which is weird considering the fact that I like the idea of making movies and well, but you know, it's there's Netflix, there's other options that are, you know, that
true
are, you know, I don't know. And I do buy this stuff. I guess the point in all of this is that it's that I think if you can't get somebody like Taylor on board, you're not, you know, Spotify, there is definitely an opening for somebody to come in and say, this is how we're going to do it. And, you know, a premium service for a premium price, period.
Mm.
And we got iTunes Radio that comes complimentary with iTunes Match. We've got iTunes Match. We have iTunes. We have all the, you know, we have the a la carte. We have those different options. And then for the premium service, we're going to charge a premium price. But it's everything you could possibly imagine and want it to be. And we get everything in the iTunes library. You know, you get, well, you get everything.
All right. I agree. I think we've beat this topic down.
All right.
So I'm going to move on. Because
it's mostly just fun being able to talk about somebody I have a crush on. So go for it.
There you go. Fair enough. Well, we're going to switch topics to something that I have a crush on.
Nice.
Yes. Office.
Oh,
yeah.
My hopes.
You know it's true. So Office has come to the iPhone, and the way that it should. So it used to be that there was an app called Office for iPhone that had all three apps kind of embedded in it, and from what I understood, it was horrible. And then on the iPad, it had the three individual apps, the three being Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, because Outlook's built into it. It doesn't really make sense to have that as a separate app. How did it work? If you downloaded it and you could view it for free, and if you wanted to create one or edit one, I'm guessing save is involved in there too. Yeah. You had to have an Office 360 subscription, speaking of subscriptions.
Right.
I don't have any stats, but my guess is that's not going as well as they would like. And
honestly, they claim it's going very well.
Yeah, I know. They also claim that Windows 8 was a mega blockbuster seller. So, you know, I take everything they say with a grain of salt. So, and I think we have further proof here, because this last week, looks like it was like Thursday, they revamped Office for iOS. So now the iPhone has three individual apps, and they're just mini versions of the iPad one, so they look and work a whole lot better. And furthermore, this is kind of a big deal, you can now edit, create, save for free. You do not need a subscription. You need an Office or Microsoft account, which I just signed in with my Xbox Live account, and it worked. So,
why do you have an Xbox Live account?
I don't. Well, what was the reason? Oh, I was at a friend's house, and we thought it would make sense to make one for some reason. So I had one. So anyway, so I signed in with that one, and it worked. I was like, oh, cool. So it's tied to my my live.com email. So I'm like,
nice.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm like, man, I hope I get all my updates. So and then the other thing that they did was they partnered with Dropbox so that you connect that to your account, which is good because that's where I save all of my documents. So you can open up and save your Office documents from Dropbox and to Dropbox, which is pretty sweet. And so I download it because, like I said, I have a crush, especially on Excel. And I opened up a couple of, like, I have this real estate investment spreadsheet that I use. And sometimes when we have our real estate meeting, it's like, man, it'd be nice to be able to input a live change here because someone makes an interesting suggestion and, you know, actually run it through the old, you know, spreadsheet.
I'll go to
Yeah, and I can't normally because I like got it on paper because I printed it off for the meeting. Now I don't have to do that anymore, which is awesome. From what I understand, people really like it. You know, I like I said, I looked at it and went, well, you know, it's cool, I guess. It works well. I don't see myself. Again, I could see it using it for the exact reason that I just said, where I've got one, it's live, and so I can like update a number in the spreadsheet or something. You know, I can imagine if you were a salesperson and someone was like, what if I bought this many? You could calculate it real quick and, you know, run it through your algorithm or something. Sweet. But the big thing here is they're essentially giving it away for free.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. I mean, we've long said that you know, we've held the position that out of Redmond, their number one product that, you know, they think it's Windows, but, you know, that's mostly just because it's, you know, so well supported by so many different developers. The reality of it is, like, as far as platforms, programs that they have that are just, you know, awesome, the Office Microsoft suite is pretty much like your number one, and most importantly, it's like it's for good reason. It's not, you know, there aren't alternatives out there that are really better. You know, I would say as far as your word processor apps go, they're all kind of the same. You know, there's some cool perks that come with the Apple stuff. You know, layouts, they handle layouts very well. You know, Google obviously has their whole working, you know, their doing, you know, yep, everything's online, and collaboration is highly accessible. But Word is just, you know, it's the foundation of the word processor. It's good. They've got a lot, yeah, of tools. It's very well supported. You know, PowerPoint, same thing. It's nobody likes, you know, presentations, slideshow presentations, and nobody likes them. Nobody likes them. If you think you like them, you're lying. It's because you're the one giving it, and you like to hear your own voice.
That is the only way that HP communicates, is through presentations.
Which is just astounding. You know, it's better than nothing, I guess. But
it's to the point where, like, if you build, like, something in Excel, like, that's awesome. Put it into a presentation to talk about it. Like, yeah. I can't just show the actual Excel thing. It's got to be in a slide set. Yep. Okay.
Hey, man, you got to use the whole suite. We paid for it. We might as well use it. but Excel is like, there's nothing that's
remotely close. That's
the equivalent. Yeah. It's just in a league of all its own. It's incredibly powerful. It's just out of this world and powerful. So when you take the Office suite as a whole, you've got two programs that are at least as good, better at some things, not as good at other things, but, you know, on average, you know, on par with what the other offerings that are out there, and then one that is just head and shoulders ahead of everything else. And they were trying to leverage that into a, you know, like you said, a paid subscription model, and now they're kind of blowing that up. And it's an interesting move because it's, you know.
Well, the problem that they're running into is that they're competing against companies. Again, I'm thinking of Apple and Google, that they don't make their money off of software.
Yeah.
So they can give it away. Yeah. And they do. And like you said, for at least two of the three, they're viable alternatives.
Yeah.
And so when you start to look at it that way, you go, man, charging it starts to seem like a joke.
Yeah, it does. And you know, yeah, it's funny. I use the Apple suite primarily for, well, yeah. Well, you know, we use Google Docs for the show. I use the, you know, iLife or whatever they're calling it, iWorks suite for my personal stuff, writing and whatever. And then I use the Office suite at work, and pretty much because my boss pays for it. You know, I don't do enough Excel work to justify having to own it. Mm. I think I've talked about it on the show before. I hate their licensing structure.
yeah.
That's so ridiculous. Not allowed to publish anything using the standard Word and Excel. You're not allowed to use this for making money. Like, why did I pay for this thing? It's just a student version? I hate you guys. But whatever. I guess for me, it's inevitable. It's sort of, it just doesn't make sense in this world to not have it. There are some features that you can access without the paid subscription, though, right? I'm assuming pivot tables.
Premium features? I have no idea. It just says like advanced editing. I don't know what that means.
I'm guessing pivot tables. Well, that's usually what that means.
Could you even do a pivot table in it? That doesn't make any sense. Here, let me take a look real quick. Let me open Excel on my phone. Go to Recents. I'll open up my investment sheet. Downloading, opening, thinking. All right, let's see here. I can change font looks and styles. Cool. I can do a search. Apparently, I can add people. Email as link, email as attachment. Okay, that's cool. Let's see, what happens if I tap on a cell? What happens? Open up. All right, there we go. Double tap it up. I could type in it. All right. Well, what?
Nothing.
So it's just some basic. Oh, what do we have here? Oh, insert charts and text box formulas. It's the basic editing.
So it's sort of like if you build a form on your computer, you save it to this account, then you can fill out the fields and actually use the form on your phone, basically.
That's how I would approach it, yeah.
Okay.
I would not be making any of this from scratch. That sounds horrible. Well, at least the type of spreadsheets that I make.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
I made this, it was this investor training sheet that taught you how to evaluate properties. And I gave the spreadsheet to people to use, and I kept kind of waiting to see what their feedback was, because a lot of them I'd have like a simple equation, but like, you just divide these two and it comes out with this ratio and you can use to compare properties and stuff like that. The division was in there. It just happened to be wrapped around a bunch of if statements and error checking and stuff, so that if one of the fields wasn't filled in, it didn't give you an error. It just was blank.
Yeah.
And to have people look at it and go, huh, that was a lot more complicated than I thought it would be. Like, well, you know, wanted to look good.
Yeah. But it's funny. That's always one of the most interesting parts about programming to me, when you actually, like, pull apart code, is that the vast majority of code, I mean, like, just the mountains of code you're looking at, it's almost all dealing with the edge cases. It's the... we haven't had enough fields filled in yet. Like, the actual code that does the work is usually like a tenth of the handling that's required. It's making sure that it doesn't break and that everything works right. And, you know, it's an interesting, the edge case.
But now I can use it live in the meeting. I'm excited.
That is very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I'm excited for Microsoft. I don't know what the ongoing strategy is, but at least it's a strategy that allows them to move forward. Because I think the strategy they had was rather limiting. At least this. I don't know what the end goal is. I'm not sure Microsoft knows what the end goal is, but at least Satya is not.
They took a bet, right? This stuff's so valuable, people will pay for it. Turns out they were wrong, and they were slowly finding alternatives, and they were like, oh, okay, before we totally sink this ship, we need to stop this up.
Yeah. I'll probably download it so I can use it, because, hey, why not? It's free.
Just need a Microsoft account, yeah.
Exactly, and I have that. Spotify, not Spotify. Skype. That's how they roped me in.
Mm. All right.
What are we talking about next?
Poor gamers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So this is really interesting. So there's this term that's thrown around in the gaming industry a lot called core gamers.
Right.
Oftentimes referred to as your hardcore gamers or
yep.
guys, essentially the guys that own PlayStations and the Xboxes. That's kind of what you're talking about.
So not me. I'm such a yes. loser.
Your Nintendos have become sort of your casual gaming audience.
I even have last gen. It's sad.
I know. It is. It's really embarrassing, is what it is.
I had someone ask me how did they ask? We were talking about gaming and I was like, oh, I'm not really a core gamer. And, you know, but somehow in there, they asked like, well, do you have video game consoles? And
yeah,
I remember I was talking to some parents and they were talking about the fact that they didn't let their kids play video games. And that's why they were well-balanced individuals, which I would agree. They were good kids. And I was like, huh, that's bad news. Cause I like video games and I think they're cool. And, like, oh, do you have video game consoles? I was like, well, that's complicated. Yes, but I don't have a television, so they're not hooked up to anything. So where does that fit in?
Yeah.
But anyways, so I'm not a core gamer.
But well,
people
yeah,
are.
By any definition. So you've got your casual gamers, which are guys that, like, bought your Wiis. What's that one game that just came out? Modern Warfare, Battlefield. That's what it's called. Your Battlefield stuff like that. And then there was your mobile gamers, people who played Farmville on Facebook and such. And then there's also your PC gamers, the guys that build rigs and oftentimes make fun of the platform gamers as peasants because their graphic quality is so much less than what's possible on the PC. Which are really like your PC gamers are really your hardcore, but they also tend to be the smallest audience and less served because they're small. This article is pretty interesting because it basically says that's wrong. Model has been true for a very long time. And one of the reasons why core gamers really got the title that they got is because they drive most of the amount of money. The biggest studios were working on the biggest AAA titles for those platforms. That's why they're the core. They're the buoy of the whole thing. The rest of it all sort of lived in the long tail of the gaming industry. But most of the money was being spent by and spent on developing games for that sort of the demographic that was playing PlayStation, Xbox, and the Wii. And to a lesser extent, PCs, but they were included in that as well. Well, by the end of like this year, most of the money is going to be spent on mobile gaming. Mobile gaming, specifically like your iPhones and your Android tablets type things. That's really where they've not quite passed your core, you know, your PlayStation. They have not taken over as 50%, but they are on par with the rest of the rest of the gaming industry. And from a capita perspective, they are the biggest group of people playing on their phone. And they're coming up on being bigger monetarily. It's one of those things. It's interesting. The old core thus became the new specialist. Gaming gains a mainstream while its old subculture reinforces its position in an ever narrowing landscape. That's how it works. Now what's left is a more artistic side of mobile gaming development and publishing to step up creativity, and as I said last week, provide the HBO side of mobile subculture, which is basically your
This is you love that Steve Jobs analogy of trucks to cars to bicycles.
Yep.
I mean, that's essentially what this is. There was a time when trucks were the core.
Yeah.
And that was what most people had and what you built it for. And then, you know, culture changed and they were no longer the core. Sure, there's still a lot of them out there and you can still make a good living by going to them, but that's not where the majority of people are at anymore. And I think that that's true with games too, where, yeah, there very much was a core and they haven't necessarily gone away. But some people have left and in the, a lot more, the, how do I want to say, and the market has expanded to pick up a lot more people too.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that core has changed. That's interesting though, to say, hey, it's time that we change this definition here of what core is. Cause, it's no longer what we thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where I think when people talk about core gamers, they'll continue to refer to platform gamers for a long time, because I think platform gamers tend to be annoying in general.
Well, they're still hardcore gamers. I mean,
exactly. They want to think that they are the core of gaming, so they'll continue to, because they're hardcore, they'll want to call themselves that. But yeah, the reality of it is it's hard to, it's not possible to justify calling them that anymore. And mobile gaming's where it's at. It's interesting that nobody's really figured out how to bridge the success of a very popular app into a sustainable studio yet. That's a weird dilemma going on. But it's just a matter of time before, you know, you have a couple of studios really kind of do what EA did, what Rovio and the dudes who made Farmville tried to, and failed to do, Zynga.
Zynga.
You know, because they were, you know, for obvious reasons, but, yeah. Mm. You understand?
Okay.
Let's talk about Amazon, though.
Are you an Amazon Prime member?
I'm not, but every day that goes by, I'm feeling more and more compelled that I should be.
Unlimited video or photo storage.
Oh, baby. But only if...
They're following that model that I suggested Apple should do. They just keep... They started out with something, and they just keep adding and adding and adding to it.
Yeah.
To the point where you finally go, why not?
Exactly. And, yeah, so now it's unlimited storage photo, which is a pretty compelling, you know, position. You, technically, Yahoo, you can already do that, right? Right there, you've got like a terabyte of space, full resolution pictures on Flickr. But, you know, we've asked this question a bunch, like who wins the photo sharing war or the photo storage war? And I think that this ultimately is this. If you listen back to the show, you would recall that basically this is what we said. It's probably going to be something you're paying for. So that way it basically just acts as a drive for all of your photos and an easy way to share and look at all of them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Apple has got that solution kind of going on with the, you know, paying for iCloud. But not as, you know, obviously not unlimited, so it's a different deal, but it's a similar direction. Amazon is, you know, taking it to the nth degree with theirs. I think you're going to start to see Google and Facebook have to, they actually want to win that war. They're going to have to go in a similar direction. But I think paying for it is a piece of
that. Doesn't Google have unlimited uploads to Google Plus?
I think in the same way that Facebook does, but that's the problem, is that, you know, you realize you're selling something. You're, you know, they're making money off pictures, and that's what's one of the big limiting factor for a lot of people, and why it doesn't feel like you can use that as a really secure storage for your memories. Whereas I feel like, you know, paying $20 or paying $100 a year, gives it a little more while I'm paying for this sort of thing, you know?
Hmm.
But that wasn't the only thing that Amazon did this week.
It wasn't?
It wasn't.
Oh, I missed that.
Did you not hear about this? Yeah, man. Amazon launched a new piece of hardware.
Oh. Yeah, I think I read briefly about it. Tell me about it. Is that the stick?
It's what's called the Echo. It's not a stick so much as it's like a cylinder. It sits on your counter. It's got all sorts of speakers and stuff in it and microphones. But basically it has an audio assistant built into it that you can talk to. It's kind of like Siri, except it's named Alexa, unless you change the name, and then it can be anything. It's called the Amazon Echo. It answers all sorts of questions for you. What's the weather like? What's this going to be like? There was a really, really funny video that was posted on Reddit through YouTube where, because it's a really bad commercial, like it's terrible, just bad acting, kind of awkward. So somebody went through and changed to all the audio of Echo responding and changed it to it being a little bit having a little more what's the word I'm looking for?
Sass.
Sass. Yeah, that's a yeah. A little bit less safe for work language. It's pretty funny, and especially because the acting by the family is so bad. Like, given the juxtaposing it to the rather curt responses that the new Echo gives, it's pretty funny. But yeah, it's you can do stuff like you can add things always,
say that one more time.
Presumably the NSA. It's always on. It's always listening. So you can just say, "Hey, Alexa," and then the NSA gets a copy of whatever you were asking for.
So, what's the use for this?
Basically, it's just a smart hub. It's sort of like it's a Siri replacement, but it's
just stays at home.
It allows you.
It's like the computer for Star Trek.
Yeah. Exactly.
Huh.
It's like a Hey Google hardware. Or, yeah, a Siri, you know, stand.
Why do they feel the need to have it be a standalone device that just sits at your home?
Because nobody's buying the Fire Phone.
Huh. This seems dumb. I'm sorry.
That's fun. Yeah. It's, you know, I think they're spitballing right now, man. I feel like they're just sort of throwing stuff.
I was reading an article that was like, Bezos might have jumped the shark. He seems to be, yeah, they're like, at one point in time, Amazon seemed unstoppable. They'd conquer market after market after market. And now that they've entered this hardware space, they're like, maybe they should stick to web stuff. And
yeah,
because this doesn't seem, I don't know. I just look at this and go, why would I ever buy one of those? Yeah. I don't get it.
Yeah.
Why not just build it into your phone and tablets and Kindles and stuff?
Well, yeah, and yeah, exactly, because it's especially like I could see somebody selling like a especially for Google to support Google stuff, where you'd build something that like ties into all you know, like there needs to be a smart hub for your smart home, right? And having this functionality built into it, I think makes sense. But
I don't get it. Why not have built it into their Fire TV unit? You know, to me, I'm like, that seems like a very obvious place to have it. It's already in your home. It can act as that hub. And maybe you have a couple satellite speaker microphone things, but it's connected to that, which is connected to the internet, which is connected to your phone, whatever. I don't see the need for a separate device. Can you at least pair things to it via Bluetooth so you can listen to music? Is it like a pill?
I think so, but I think it's sort of like you can listen to music on it. It's definitely like that, but I think it's like it plays your Amazon library, you know? This is definitely one of those things where it's clearly like they didn't want to do what they did with the Fire Phone, where the Fire Phone's one of its primary features is that it's designed to make you spend money on Amazon. This, they clearly took all those features out, and with the full intent of having them show up later. You know, and the one of the articles I read, they basically, they said the catch line that they came up with was they want one click to become no click. But let's be clear,
$200. Oh my gosh.
But it's only $99 if you have Amazon Prime. Same cost as outright, but now you have Amazon Prime, which is interesting. You can ask it what the weather, you can set an alarm, you can ask it for information about Abraham Lincoln. It's a personal assistant in a tube. But let's be clear here on what this thing is beyond, or let's be, but let's be clear here on what this thing is beyond that, or what it will be. Amazon is not in the business of telling you whether or not it will rain tomorrow, nor is in the business of waking you up in the morning, nor is in the business of teaching you about dead presidents. Amazon is in the business of selling you things, and that is why Echo exists. For now, Echo's shopping-centric functionality is limited to helping you add things to your shopping list. You need some pickles? Cool. Just say, Alexa, add pickles to my shopping list. And it won't order them for you yet. It'll just add them to a list for you to look at later. But if Echo sees any sort of success, just watch how fast that will change. You'll be able to say, Alexa, order me a copy of Kung Fu Panda 2, and it'll be done. Alexa, order me some dope high thread count Egyptian cotton sheets. And bam, done.
Done.
Sheets are on their way.
Hopefully it gets the right size.
And then it drops the phrase, one-click purchase becomes no-click purchase. You know. That's obviously what it is. And that's the whole motivation behind it, not, you know, what will make people actually want to buy it. And it also begs the question of why not just build this into the Fire TV as another compelling point and allow the Fire TV to connect to Bluetooth speaker microphones around your house.
Because the Fire TV was genuinely cool.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
content's always going to be an issue, but I thought it was neat, and I just
I completely agree. It is neat. I think it's a good little piece of hardware. And for the same reason, I think that, or you know, the Fire TV, I think is a good piece of hardware. For the same thing, same reason, I think the Apple TV is a good piece of hardware. Yeah, this is just weird. It's just too limited of a use case. It doesn't make sense. It's whatever.
So, speaking of the old smarty homes, Nest is getting a software update. Woo! And I care because I have one right there.
Well, maybe I can see it.
Just staring at me, daring me to go away. So they're going to do a software update sometime in the next couple weeks, which I'm like, that's just going to be cool to not think that your thermostat can get software updates. Cause that's kind of what speaks to being a smart home, I guess. New interface, new design. It sounds like the big feature behind it is it will do a better job of learning your schedule. I guess you'll have to do less teaching. It will learn faster, which is cool. But there's something more interesting going on for Nest in, I believe it is Ireland, if I remember correctly.
Ireland.
The Irish. They have partnered up with Electric Ireland. Okay?
Okay.
How about this? If you sign up for a 2-year contract with Electric Ireland, Nest will give you a smart thermostat for, wait for it, free.
Oh, that is, you know what that's less than? Money.
It's brilliant, I think. And if they can figure out how to roll this out to the United States, you'll see Nests everywhere.
Well, yeah, and especially because part of Nest's, you know, as we've talked about, part of their financial model is, especially for a continuous basis, is signing these contracts with power companies and balancing the loads for the power companies.
Yep.
And they get money that way. That's not their own. It's not their only revenue stream as a subsidiary of Google. To selling hardware, and and there's a lot of money to be made just having these everywhere and being the only thermostat that people use. You know, if they could.
Yeah, the whole network effect is huge here.
Oh yeah, it's nuts. It would be incredibly powerful for them to become the preeminent thermostat. There was a Nest in 90% of homes, and there just wasn't even like a competitor that was able to step in. If they could do to thermostats what Apple did to iPods, I would just be out of control. The only problem is by giving away these $200 devices for free, they're kind of showing people how much money they're worth, and that they're worth at least that for whatever they're doing, and not necessarily that doesn't matter to the consumer so much as that matters to the competition. And now all of a sudden you have to fight other major competitors and stuff, and for becoming that, I don't know. It's complicated. There's not necessarily a straightforward path to victory here, but I think I want one. I don't want to justify it yet. I'm trying to justify my iPhone 6 instead.
I understand. Yeah, if I were them, I would have charged like $25 something, and yeah, you know, because that sure people would have done it, but. An interesting concept, like you were talking about. They're figuring out how to make money somewhere else. I'm trying to think too, like, you know, right now, I do not care if you get a Nest. You know, you buying one does not influence my experience. Whereas, you know, so all that to say, like, the network effect doesn't matter. Outside of the fact that potentially, if enough people signed up for it, my electric bill would go down because, right, like, of the load balancing, like you talked about. But even then, that's an indirect piece. I feel like they have to figure out. I don't know. I feel like they've got to figure out how to make it worth it for me to say, dude, you got to get one because it's going to make my life and your life better. And yeah. You know, or try to get your neighbors to sign up for it or something. I don't know, or not sign up, but to buy one. And I don't fully know how that could work, other than how fascinating would it be. I'm thinking about like the Nest Protect, where if you and all your neighbors had one and it knows where you are spatially, which I don't know if it does, other than maybe the app tracks you and it knows where you're at. But could you imagine if you had a neighbor's house catch on fire that, you know, you got alerted to it. It wasn't just their house.
Yeah, you know, that would be cool.
That could be very interesting. Could you imagine, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think again, and maybe these combine it with Dropcam, where let's say your house is under surveillance and someone breaks in, or, you know, someone's robbing the house. Your neighbors get alerted to it because it knows that they're home and you're not. And, you know, or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, where could there be some interesting neighborhood watch type of interactions that could be
really try to get people to benefit from the network effect so that they're selling it for you.
What if it's something like, you know, all of your neighbors, they have their AC running, and for some reason your heater's running. And you get a notification that goes, hey, just want to double check that you got your settings right, because we noticed you're way out of balance from everyone else in your neighborhood. What's going on? You know, and we check the weather patterns, and it's hot out. You know, we think.
Do we need to call an ambulance for you?
Yeah. You know, something like that. I don't know. But I'm trying to figure out if they could crack that little nut. Because I just don't think it's compelling enough to say, if you get everyone to sign up, your electric bill will go down. I just don't think that's compelling enough. There's got to be a social aspect to it.
Yeah, yeah. You get extra likes on Facebook.
Ooh, something. Get a notification when someone comes home. No, that's too much. That's over the top.
Yeah, besides, I want a notification before they get home so I can stop goofing off and make sure all my garbage is put away. That's more important.
But anyways, yeah, so they're making an update and experimenting with new business models.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I like it. So continuing this conversation about Apple Pay, this is just funny. Basically, well, I don't know if it's funny, but so Google Wallet usage is up dramatically in the last couple of weeks.
Surprise, surprise. Because
everybody forgot that they had, you know, this device on their phone. But yeah, so they, you know, it's just Apple Pay causes a dramatic increase in Google Wallet usage. It's up, you know, a lot. And the trend seems to be going even further in that direction. And it's an interesting thing of, you know, why. Apple has done this before where they've introduced some product and sort of, you know, rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah, they're doing it again. Totally makes sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's this idea of just like, you know, Apple is actually advertising it. They're doing really good advertising, which is basically it's kind of the whole, like, you know, people either didn't know or they forgot or they didn't really know what it was all about. And Apple's basically putting it back on the front of everybody's mind. And so people with their Google phones or their Android phones pull and bust down and go, hey, Google Wallet's here. This is kind of cool. You know, Apple, one of the things that they do that they're really great about is that they're so silent about whatever they're going to do until they roll it out that there's no time for things to get forgotten about. You know, whereas like the Google Wallet, when it first got launched and had its most excitement, you couldn't tether credit cards to it. So it was like it wasn't really useful. Whereas Apple, because they waited till it was a complete package, they had all the different – they had security in place. They had agreements worked out with the banks. They had – you know, there was already shops that they could go to that they could connect with, you know, because there was the whole infrastructure was already there. So the day they told us about it, a couple days later, they flipped the switch and it was on. So the excitement was there. They advertised it really well, just getting, you know, they've got a bunch of different people coming in and advertising it. And because of those two things, they just generate a tremendous amount of excitement about whatever thing they're launching. And then, you know, as a result, there's this sort of Me Too jealousy that gets brought into it. And, you know, basically people saying, wow, this is a really exciting platform. They're well educated about it because there's a good advertising campaign. And then, the Apple braggers, you know, the Apple fanboys against the Google fanboys. Oh yeah, well, we've been able to have a Google Wallet forever, so we're pretty cool too. Like, yeah, but you never use it. So there's that. And it's cool to watch, and and I think you're seeing that with the watch too. You know, Apple announced their watch, and since Apple announced the Apple Watch, there's been like 19 different like watches, and they're all very similar. They're either copying the Moto X or they're copying what they thought the Apple Watch was going to be. And that's like, it is so clear that, you know, Apple got people excited about it and they're doing the same thing again. And they're bringing a market into reality. So competition is already starting to crowd in and don't forget about me, you know? And
speaking of which, did you see that one mock-up of the Apple Watch interface applied to an iPhone?
I did see that.
It looked pretty cool, actually.
It did look pretty cool.
It's like, I download that. I try it out. That would be one of the perks on Android, because you could actually do that to have that kind of skin. But that's all right. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. They do have that ability to drive awareness to... we'll call it an industry. I don't know if that's the right term for it, but a type of technology perhaps, and remind people all over to try it, which increases the chances of it being successful. I mean, I know for me, I've only used it a couple times cause I don't go shopping enough and Home Depot doesn't support it. That's like the only place I go shopping. and which I cry every single time because this kills me. On the machine, it says swipe or tap to pay, and I've tapped about 20 times, and every time it's like card denied, won't work. I'm like, ugh, killing me. It's so frustrating. I hate it. And so, I haven't gone to enough places yet. But every time I do swipe my card, I just die a little bit inside. And there is a better way. I know it, but that's okay. Final story.
Go for it.
Final story. This was actually kind of a letdown, but I'm still going to talk about it anyways because I want one. On Beep is a company that launched the Onyx. How would you pronounce that? The Onyx, O-N-Y-X. It's a simple wearable that enables two-way voice communication that looks kind of like an ugly communicator from Star Trek. And but I'm still like, that's pretty cool. It pairs via Bluetooth to your phone. It could also work in conjunction with, like, say, a Bluetooth headset. I originally was looking at it because Jesse and I we've talked about getting into bicycling a little bit, but you know, talking is and communicating is a bit of an issue, and so we've looked into two-way communication stuff, and there just aren't any a lot of really good compelling ones out there, because we've talked about, like, I have talked about, and she's been an unwilling participant of, like, taking an actual, like, a long bike trip to go somewhere.
That's cool.
Yeah, like, I got a friend, I played football with him in college, where he goes on bike rides, and he'll bike ride, like, 1,000 miles over a period of, like, a week.
That's a commitment right there.
Yeah, and while he goes, that's how he travels. You know, he'll go on a bike ride. And I was like, dude, that sounds amazing. And, you know, could you imagine taking, like, Highway 1 down to visit you guys? And it's like, yeah, we rode the coast. And we took maybe a week or two to do it. And you're just going, I don't know, 100 miles a day sounds like a lot. But 50 miles a day is highly doable if you're in shape. And so that was kind of my, like, oh, dude, that'd be so awesome. And then I was like, but I'd want to be able to talk to you during the way. And so I'd want to have some sort of, and I just don't want to have a long phone call. That sounds horrible. Yeah. But to have some sort of two-way communication would be really cool to be able to chat that way. Because that was always our problem when bike riding. It was like one of you is always leaning back trying to talk and you can still barely hear and it's annoying. So I saw this and was like, oh, yeah, maybe this would be the high-tech alternative. It works with your phone and so you don't have some separate headset walkie-talkie thingamajigger. So I got all excited and then I started reading down and it's Wi-Fi only.
Bummer.
And I went, why? Well, I don't understand.
Why does this exist?
Yeah. Like, I feel like you were on your way to solving a problem and then just kind of like didn't.
Yeah.
So it really, you know, they talk about it's for like big event stuff. Like it might be for like a concert or something. And so, if you're doing some sort of event organization, you can get everyone on the same page at once by just doing two-way communication. It's like, huh. So it's a product that I think has a lot of potential. It's currently, you can go on Kickstarter and get one if you want. It's $100 for one or $195 for two. They're like, we recommend you start with two.
Like, yeah.
Good. I'm glad. That would be weird if it didn't. But they said that they actually found that a lot of people, they get like somewhere between 5 and 10. And again, it just allows for that group communication type stuff. And it's nice because you're not on some shared frequency. So the people can't get in on your channel, which I was like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. But one of those, I love the idea. The execution of it doesn't seem to be quite what I would want it to be.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was my, sorry, not quite as.
It happens sometimes with companies. It's. Yeah, it happens. You got a good idea and it just doesn't,
They said they were looking into how can we do this over the cell network. Like, yeah, that would be neat. Yeah. But, you know, obviously a lot harder to do.
Well, yeah, I guess. But like you said, they were so close to actually solving the problem. They obviously wanted to get to market with something, and kind of look at it like, well, what did we really do here, guys? What did we really do? I'm not sure we did much.
Yeah, but they've raised some money, so they're, most people think they're onto something.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyways, Mark Zuckerberg did do an Ask Me Anything, but it wasn't on Reddit. It was just with Facebook internally, and then they shared it.
Be cool.
Yeah, he's, I don't know if he's human or not. I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, he's weird, though.
Dude, he's so weird. Where was his one? No, where is it? Why do you wear the same shirt every day? Says that making small decisions about what you wear and eating is tiring. I feel like I'm not doing my job if I spend any of my energy on stuff that's frivolous.
It's funny. There's a part of me that's like, I get that. There's a part of me that gets that. But at the same time, I think he's, whatever. It works for him. I'm not. Who am I to criticize? Who am I to criticize? Mark Zuckerberg. I personally think that there's something to be said for fashion, even if you don't particularly enjoy it or you're not particularly good at it. The idea that it has no value is a flawed perspective. I think he benefits a lot from being one of the richest people, being the richest dude of his age, you know?
The thing I come up with is like, there's, I don't want to say it. Oftentimes your most creative moments come when you're not directly thinking about your problem. You're doing something else. And he's inherently setting up his life, so he's always thinking about the problem. And, you know, it's one of those where you think about what they've done with at least their mobile apps in recent history, and they've all kind of failed. And like you said, the one that they had paper, that was actually pretty good. They switched it to the old version, and therefore it's lost its utility for you. You just sit there and it's like, I don't know, Mark. Maybe you need to let yourself get distracted a little bit here and get off your core game. It doesn't seem to be working anymore.
Well, and I guess more importantly, I think it's very Steve Jobsian, you know. The difference is, and this is what's really interesting about Steve Jobs, is it's not that Steve Jobs doesn't care about fashion at all. It actually is that he cares desperately about it.
Yes.
It bothers him deeply when things are ugly, when his clothes are ugly. So he found one solution that is that it allowed him to find something that wouldn't be all consuming to him. Because if he let himself any space to breathe, it became all consuming, trying to find good clothes that fit, that like had the utility and were beautiful and everything. Yeah. Like he just,
it was like they told him it took him like years to find the right washer and dryer set.
Exactly, because it's all consuming. He is so particular that he finally found something that worked and said, you know what? I could put up with this for the rest of my life. Not I like this, not this is the best. It's this is good enough, and I can actually put this problem behind me. Whereas Zuckerberg, I get the feeling that it's, he doesn't care about fashion because it's just not, you know, he's a computer dork, and that's computer dorks generally don't. And he's basically like, you know, he's basically saying the reason why I don't care about fashion is because I'm so smart and I'm so concerned about other things. I mean, it's sort of.
But like, also smacks of like just lying.
Oh yeah.
You know, really, that's, you're just all consumed all the time. You know, I don't know.
It's not lying. It's hubris. It's
there we go.
Pompousness.
Yes.
I know guys like that. I've made those arguments before. Oh, the reason why I don't clean my room is because it's not worth. Or no. This is the one that I always use, and I think there's some validity to it. But it's like I refuse to remember anything that's recorded somewhere else that I can look up easily. Why would I bother to remember that? But the things that I actually think are interesting, I'm like a freaking dictionary with. So it's not that I don't remember things that I don't need to remember. It's that I don't remember. I don't even bother to try to remember things that, oh, your birthday? Oh, I'm sorry. That's not interesting to me, and I can easily look it up, so I don't remember it. The day that, you know, Star Wars episode, you know, 3 came out, I remember that because that was an interesting story, and there's, you know, details there, and I wanted, you know, I don't know. So it just, like you said, it just reeks of exaggerating the truth. The truth is, he doesn't care, he doesn't want to care, he's never cared, and he's so rich that nobody's gonna, you know, give him any. And it's, but the problem with Zuck is that he like he normally does, and I think it's one of the reasons that he rubs people the wrong way is because he refuses to say, just look, I think fashion is stupid, and you may disagree with me, but I don't have to agree with you, and I don't. So don't worry about it. Don't think about it. It's just, it's fine.
And I like this shirt.
Yeah. Why do you spend any time thinking about it? That's what I don't get. You know, like, it's just not a problem I think about. But you can't say that. He's got to make it sound like, well, I deal with such bigger problems.
Right.
That I don't bother to think about the problems of the little people. It's he has to belittle the problems that other people have in order to make sure that you understand that he's worth as much as he is, not just financially, but just in general.
Interesting.
He is worth more than you. And I that's the feeling that answers like that drive me crazy. Unless I'm giving them, in which case I'm being the pompous jerk, but you don't have to like fashion in order to understand that there's a purpose and utility to it, and, you know, and it matters. It definitely matters. That's the biggest thing, is that fashion matters. Like, we make so many decisions based on what people wear that are, you know, beyond just, oh, she looks cute or he looks cute. It's, you know, it's a whole message about who I am, what I'm here, and what I'm here to do, and, you know, and there's context in work life, party life, you know, finding a mate, going through, like, every component, there is a fashion element to it. And it's, you can make it through your life without caring about it. But the idea that it's not affecting you is just blind ignorance. Blind ignorance. And it does affect him. It does. There's a lot of people who, he's had trouble dealing with money people who live in New York and wear a suit and tie. And, you know, but he wants to feel like he's better than them. So he, you know, I don't know, whatever. I mean, I'll write it up right at the end.
yeah, I did. That's okay. That was the most interesting one he gave. Everything else was pretty bland.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, it's the way it's going to be with him. Cool, man. Cool. Good show. Lots of stuff going on. Actually, at first I was like, "Yeah, it's a slow week, not much." Which, in some regards, is true. But
yeah, there was no giant announcements, but
yeah,
that's normal.
Company's just kind of slowly positioning themselves for Black Friday.
Exactly.
It's kind of getting ready. We're in that time period.
I know. Oh my gosh, I went to 2 malls this weekend. One on Saturday and one today, and it has started. Oh my goodness.
It's sounds about right.
I don't need to go to another mall for the rest of the Christmas season. Man, I'll end up going to at least 20 as a result.
Well, when we come to visit, I want to find an iPhone case for my phone. So we may go to one mall.
Oh, jeez. That'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be.
I keep having to remind myself, I like people. This is okay. I like people.
All right, cool. Good show. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my intrastellar brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. This is the pre-show goodies here, okay? We should create an app called Cool. That's context aware that, you know, all you say is cool, and the other person, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, yo, but it's cooler. Get it? Oh, man. It's a perfect idea. I love it. All right. Let's do this.